This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, where we explore what's driving the press and issues related to the media industry. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. The first 20 years of the century witnessed the explosion of digital media to the point of its ubiquity today. Now, how is the digital revolution impacting the media industry, and how will it shape the future of journalism and the media landscape? Joining me on the show today to discuss this is Professor Suzanne Franks, head of the Journalism Department at City University London. Welcome to the show, Professor Franks.
Thank you very much.
The digital revolution has democratized the way we disseminate and consume information. And you're a longtime media practitioner. I mean, you've were at the BBC and you also had your own production companies. Do you think that the industry saw this coming, this change coming? And was the industry and traditional media prepared for the shift?
I think absolutely they were not prepared. I think it's quite extraordinary that the news media of all places just didn't see the kind of onslaught of what was going to happen, and going digital from an offline press and media was going to be such a different environment. And, you know, I think it's been a big shock, and I think some have done better in confronting that than others. But it really is amazing how little preparation and anticipation there was of the kind of big changes that were ahead.
Why do you think that was the case?
Well, it's a paradox, I suppose, isn't it, really, that you'd think the news media of all places would be alert to change and to what was going on. I mean, the classic example that's always quoted is the photography industry, isn't it, that Kodak absolutely did not see that one day we were going to stop using sort of Instamatic cameras and printing out, sending off photos to be printed by them and to take photos in that way, that things were going to change radically, and they were left completely high and dry. And obviously it wasn't quite the same for the news media, but pretty much, I think in many areas, they just thought that they had such a great model and it was all going fine, that why should anyone want to rock the boat? And yet things have been...
And yet here we are. So which sectors of the media do you think are adapting the best? And do you think, I guess, some media sectors sort of cushioned from this kind of digital revolution?
I don't think anybody's actually cushioned. I think some have managed to cope better with this revolution, and some have been completely wiped out.
Such as what forms of media do you see dying out entirely?
Well, I mean, it's very sad, but a lot of local media, which is very important in local areas for holding local politicians to account, for monitoring what's going on in the courts and in local authorities, I think they've been devastated. And I think it would be unfair to blame them in many cases for not anticipating what was going on. I mean, they were just completely overwhelmed by changes in the business model that they couldn't cope with. But I think that's going to be a big loss to the sort of news environment in those areas.
Everywhere, but in Malaysia also, we're seeing print media becoming more and more squeezed in their space. Do you think there'll come a day where print maybe will go extinct entirely?
I think eventually probably that will be the case. I think certainly for the kind of general news media, I think print is pretty much, a dying industry. But I mean, the point is that a lot of those entities have sort of reformed themselves online. So it doesn't really matter to some extent that, you know, you still have those same artifacts that you would read historically in print and go and buy at your local newsagent, you now see an online version. I think the question is how that things are monetized and what the business model is behind that.
What examples of good business models do you see in effect today? I think there's been a lot of experimentation. What examples would you give of traditional media outlets or media outlets who are going on the right path, who seem to be making things work in the digital media age?
Well, I think the examples that I would point to where they have managed to cope pretty well with this change do tend to be at the higher end and the more specialist areas. So, for example, The Economist, you know, which is a kind of global brand and a specialist area to some extent, is managing to make the online paywall work for it and to monetize that successfully. So we're given to understand. I mean, sometimes the figures that that organisations put out aren't entirely reliable. But I think that's an example of a brand. I mean, also the New York Times claim that they are now making a profit online, which is interesting. But again, that's a huge global brand which is able to sort of, you know, manipulate
sustain itself.
Yes, exactly. Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so moving away from the business models, and let's talk about the profession of journalism itself. It's always been the perception of one of truth-seeking and independence, you know, holding those at power to account. Do you think that this still holds true in the digital age, or does journalism mean something different now than it did before, given that it seems that with the digital revolution, everyone can become a news reporter or a newsmaker in a way?
Well, I think there's a lot of things to say about that question. You've covered a big area. So, yeah, I mean, journalism, as far as I'm concerned, will always endure to the extent that it is of the fourth estate. It's holding power to account. It's finding out things that other people don't want you to know. And it has a huge, important function within any healthy democracy to that extent. And it doesn't really matter that the means by which we do journalism has obviously changed over the years, that we no longer, you know, have just a pen and a notepad and a printed paper and so on. And the actual asking difficult questions and finding out stories will always be there. But moving on to the second point that you raised, that, you know, everybody's a journalist now, so why do we need specialist journalism? I mean, I think that is very much, superficially, that might seem the case. But that's very much a sort of non sequitur, because the point is that journalists still have an absolutely vital role as gatekeepers, as trusted entities that can, you know, really professionally unearth what's going on, rather than just, you know, 100 people in their bedroom posting pictures of their cat or uploading some pictures of this and that or blogging about whatever takes their fancy. I mean, we're talking about very, very different things here, to uncover uncomfortable, difficult facts that need a lot of work, and then a lot of all the sort of verification that goes on to make sure that this is news is something we can really, that audiences can really trust.
Correspondingly, and from the perspective of a professor of journalism, you yourself mentioned that the means of how we become, how journalism goes on, might change, but the principles are still there. How are journalism courses changing then to reflect the digital revolution? Are they sort of giving the right training for journalists to tackle a new media landscape?
I think it's very important that journalism courses stay up to date. So if we sort of look at these sort of two parallel things that are going on, one is the kind of enduring aspect of telling stories and interviewing people and doing a good job of actually unearthing what's going on. That's not really changed, and that never will change as far as I can see. But the means of telling the story have radically changed. And I think students absolutely need to be brought up to date. They need to understand sort of multi-platform environment that we now do journalism. It's not good enough just to be able to write good copy. You might have to be able to understand online search optimization. You might have to be able to podcast, do video, which would then go on an online platform. All those things that when I became a journalist, one certainly didn't have to worry about. You just were, you know, one thing or the other, a broadcast journalist, a print journalist, or whatever. That's radically changed. Students need to be much more flexible and much more aware of the different means of communicating. But there are other kinds of skills that they also absolutely need. For example, data journalism, which used to be a kind of niche specialist area, is now something that's absolutely mainstream, which all, you know, good upcoming journalists do need to have an understanding of. So there are other kind of ways of telling stories, data visualization and all those sorts of things that didn't used to exist, which I think now are absolutely core parts of a curriculum.
How about in terms of the jobs market then? I mean, I think we've been seeing the media industry shrinking essentially, and people in traditional media outlets are getting laid off as companies grow smaller. I suppose, what kind of industry are new graduates coming into, and do you see them getting jobs, or is it going to be more of a freelancing gig that graduates should expect?
Well, I think there are still, plenty of jobs and plenty of large organisations, certainly as as I'm aware in Europe, are hiring. You know, if you look at the big news agencies, you look at the broadcasting organisations and also new things that emerge. You know, for example, Al Jazeera didn't exist a few years ago. I mean, a lot of our students have been employed there, or other entities that have started up. But you're right, it is a much more sort of, you know, fluid market in many ways. And a lot of students might not necessarily go to sort of traditional mainstream media, but, for example, nowadays we see NGOs that will have their own quite sophisticated press operation, a lot of sort of digital content, social media roles with all sorts of different entities. I mean, for example, there's something called Mumsnet in the UK, which is a huge organisation which brings on social media, which brings together mothers and parenting and stories. I mean, it's very big now. All the prime ministers or future prime ministers have been interviewed by them. I mean, that's a sort of operation that didn't exist a few years ago, but they employ a lot of young journalism students coming out of university. So it's a very different market, and it operates in a very different way. So I think that. That obviously is something that new and emerging journalists have to confront.
So it's sort of like where one closes a door, a window opens in a way.
Yes, but it's not quite as straightforward necessarily as that. I mean, you might need some new skills in order to climb through the window of the next one that you didn't have before.
I'm speaking to Professor Suzanne Franks, head of the Journalism Department at City University London. We'll come back with more discussion on the digital revolution and media after these messages. Stay with us, BFM 89.9. Hello, if you've just joined us, you're listening to Pressing Matters on the Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. I'm discussing the evolving landscape of journalism and media with Professor Suzanne Franks, head of the Journalism Department at City University London. So, Professor Franks, we've been talking about the industry side of the coin, but as consumers of media, would you say that consumers and I suppose society were prepared to deal with the onslaught of information sources that the digital revolution has opened up?
I think we have a considerable problem these days in terms of digital literacy. Just as we insist that children all grow up being able to sort of read and write and so on, I think it's imperative these days that youngsters and also the not so young are taught digital literacy as part of the core offering. How to distinguish between, you know, what's obviously fake and what's not fake. You know, what it means when you're retweeting a Russian bot or the sort of thing. So understanding the digital world is something that should be absolutely at the centre of the school, possibly university curriculum, and available to adults who've had to kind of adapt to this, you know, quite late in life, some of them.
What would an effective digital literacy curriculum entail?
I think you need to understand, you know, both as a child and as an adult, or about how to deal with the sort of onslaught of information that we face and why some of it might be much less reliable than others, and how to distinguish between that, and how to be much more critical in understanding the kind of things that you're faced with, and whether you need to interrogate whether things are really true or the stories that are being shared are really true. And also the whole privacy issues. I think children don't really understand what they're doing when they're giving away for free a lot of information about themselves. You need to understand that and how, you know, how that works, how the sort of advertising digital model works. I think all of this is very important.
Do you see this curriculum being implemented? I mean, do you have examples of kind of successful models of this kind of literacy that you're talking about?
Well, it's only in the very early days, because I think it's quite funny, actually, that in the 19th century, it was considered that sort of learning English wasn't really a proper subject for study in the curriculum. I mean, now we regard, you know, language and literature as key subjects, and it's taking a while before we understand that learning how to deal with the digital world it should become a key subject. I mean, there are obviously sort of different places where sort of bits and pieces of this are tried, and children are being sort of taught, you know, how to behave online and how to deal with online information. But I think we need a lot more of it, and we need it to be spread out rolled out a lot wider.
I wanted to ask you about this. This argument that I've heard from maybe some purists of media, when we're talking about digital media, we see a lot of maybe more snappy ways to convey information, yeah. And there's this argument that digital media dumbs down the consumer base, that you can only really learn something when it's read or through the written word. What do you make of that kind of argument? I mean, in the digital age when, you know, GIFs or memes are kind of the de rigueur.
Well, it's difficult to answer that question without sounding like a bit of a fuddy-duddy, isn't it? I mean, obviously, you know, I didn't grow up as a digital native, so I do prefer to read things and to absorb them in a sort of longer form way. But I suppose that for any child growing up now as a sort of digital native, it's just simply a different way of absorbing information, and we need to get used to that. But I do think it's a problem when you hear teachers say that, you know, children don't like to read books anymore. I do think that is a problem, and I think sort of this can be part of a sort of any digital literacy program, that sort of limiting screen time is a very good discipline. And it's quite interesting that a lot of the big tech platform founders in California, they send their children to a very exclusive private school where all digital devices are banned. So
it's
they obviously know something.
There. Yeah. Okay, coming to another part then. Where do you stand when it comes to the regulation of misinformation and disinformation?
Yeah, so this is an interesting issue that I think there does need to be some form of regulation. I think we have seen that now, that allowing the tech platforms just to say that it's nothing to do with them and they're not publishers and everybody can circulate what they want to circulate and that's all fine, is we're beyond that now. We've seen too many sort of very unpleasant and damaging things happen. So I think we do need to understand there's some form of regulation. I don't know if it's necessarily the tech companies that should have oversight of that, although they should be implementing it. Take, for example, in Germany now, there's a law against online hate speech. Any organization that has more than a couple of million members is absolutely responsible for hate speech, and it has to be taken down within 24 hours. I think that's had quite a good effect, but because it's very narrow, very specific. It's, you know, hate speech that incites hatred against another community, that kind of thing. However, I do think there are other situations where this idea about any kind of online misinformation needs to be taken down can be used as a very much an anti-free speech device. So I don't think it's necessarily a simple line. And I think it needs to be any regulation needs to be implemented with great care.
I was curious in terms of nomenclature, because fake news has been popularized as the term. But do you think that it's important to use misinformation or disinformation? Do you have any feelings about using fake news? Should we not be using fake news, I suppose? If you have any thoughts on that.
I'm a bit sick of the word fake news, actually, because in a sense, there's always been fake news. There's always been propaganda. Governments and organisations have used manufactured, you know, stories that aren't true and to terrible circumstances. If you look just back at both at the Second World War and the First World War. So I think fake news has been misused as a term. I think what's new now is the kind of monetization by online entities of spreading false stories in order to make, you know, huge amounts of money out of it. And this really started in the presidential election in 2016, when you got these kids in their bedroom in Macedonia making a lot of money out of circulating ridiculous nonsense stories. So I don't personally particularly like the term fake news, because it implies that we didn't have fake misinformation beforehand. So I prefer to use a term, as you say, like misinformation.
And coming to that point about how you say fake news being monetized, is there a way to tackle that? Is there anybody at this point tackling it in a serious way, or?
Well, I think there are pressures now on the tech platform saying that, you know, you've got all these fancy algorithms, you know, you can tell me whether I, you know, like a sort of pink dress on a Tuesday, or they can go down to all your infinite tiny preferences. So why can't you stop ridiculous and very unpleasant, often things being circulated? I mean, you know, there was this terrible incident when the massacre happened in Christchurch, New Zealand recently, when live streaming of that event was circulated on and shared many, many times online. So I think the pressure should be, first of all, on the platforms to use their very, very sophisticated technology to take down stuff that isn't true or that is damaging. But I think beyond that, we need a sort of wider framework, really, for understanding a lot of these problems, so that the organisations aren't just acting as kind of independent censors, but they're doing that within a legal framework.
Okay, Professor Franks, I'm going to end on this question. Do you think that the media landscape is better today than it was? On the balance of things, are you glass half empty or half full?
Oh, I think that's a very difficult question. I mean, you always get people sort of talking about the golden age that we used to have. I don't necessarily subscribe to that. I mean, there's all sorts of exciting things that go on now that were completely undreamt of before. So I think we should celebrate those. I don't mean to sound, just gloom and doom. So I think we should celebrate what is exciting and new, and that the costs of entry into media have declined now, so that it's not just the sort of big moguls that can be media professionals or media owners. But I think there are a lot of problems now which we haven't completely grasped. And I think if we would take hold of a lot of that, then we could make the environment much healthier, safer and better than it is at the moment.
Thank you, Professor Franks. I've been speaking to Professor Suzanne Franks, the head of the Journalism Department at City University London. That's all the time that we have on Pressing Matters today. Coming up next is the 10 a.m. News Bulletin, followed by Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.